Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, isn't it refreshing?
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Driven by our D&M Leasing Studios, you're rolling with the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan.
It is LSU night here at the ballpark. Is our number one of the G-Bag Nation live from the Comerica backyard. Zach Wolchuk, the Super Bowl champ, in his LSU gear. Our Super Bowl winning scout, Brian Broaddus, repping the Texas LSU jersey. He's got the all Baton Rouge shirt on. Yep. Eric Chiafalo with his shades. And, of course, Lucius Alexander back at Master Control. We got Austin Nix coordinating your video. Thank you so much. But it is LSU night. It is themed. I do not believe it is a sellout yet. This includes a custom LSU Texas Rangers sleeveless hoodie for tonight's game between the Rangers and the Angels.
My hope is that I can grab one of these. Now, we've determined there's two sizes.
That's what we've been told.
Yeah. There's a medium and an extra large. The extra large needs to be motivation then, right, guys?
That's right. I think
that's what we're using it as right now.
Do we need to do the extra large?
Yeah.
But hey, nice to have a LSU night here. This will be fun. I appreciate the boss. I know you guys probably don't care, but it's nice to come out here and maybe see some LSU fans.
Yeah, I like the colors.
Yeah. Come on out here and hang out with us today.
And it's a good pitching matchup. Jacob DeGrom taking on Soriano. A couple of righties, both with sub-3.5 ERAs. DeGrom coming in 3-4-8. Can he get out of the first inning? Can he not allow some homers? Probably not. I'm sure there'll be one allowed. But then he settles in and he becomes the buzzsaw that is DeGrom the nation. Soriano started off the season. I mean, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball through the first month to 2 months of the season. And things have kind of evened out a little. But certainly the ace of the fifth place, last place, L.A. Angels of Anaheim. I don't know what they're called. They were supposed to just be the Anaheim Angels if they want any money to go ahead and get that stadium redone, which is actually a nice stadium. I mean, it's not very busy. It was basically the Ohtani Stadium when we went there.
Yes.
Everything was Ohtani'd out.
Yeah.
Now he's gone. I'm curious who they're really pumping. Maybe it's Mike Trout, and they refuse to trade Mike Trout. Ownership said again. They're playing him the same way Ohtani did, despite the Philadelphia Phillies' interest. But Angels in town, and DeGrom tonight is always a fun one. Crazy listening to KNC give the updates on what happened between Argentina and Egypt. Egypt's up 2-0 the majority of this game.
Mm-hmm.
And they're heading into the closing stages, and then bang. Here comes Messi with an assist to Christian Romero in the 79th minute. Then Messi gets a goal of his own 4 minutes later to tie the game. Record 6 straight World Cup knockout matches to help Argentina now reach the quarterfinal, where they will await the winner of Colombia and Switzerland. And then you've got Enzo Fernandez gets the second minute stoppage time, completes a remarkable turnaround at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta as the reigning defending world champion, Argentina, comes back to win. That's crazy. And that's a gut-wrenching way to lose. Like, I was driving in, I had a buddy of mine text and say, hey, would you rather have just gotten the doors broken down, like what happened with Team USA last night in Belgium, just from the word go, basically, hey, you don't have a chance tonight, or you're Egypt, you lead 2-0 the majority of the match, and then you just fall apart the final 11 minutes in stoppage time and lose.
There's a couple of things here. I would always give me quick death. Don't give me slow death. You know, I want a quick death if it happens.
If you want to lose, you want to get embarrassed.
I mean, to me, I want to just, if it happens, I mean, last night, that thing, you hit the equalizer, and then like a couple minutes later, it's back to 2-1, and you're like going,
but like seconds later,
you're like going, oh geez, not this, you know. But I would assume, give me the part where I just don't I know it's over with. Don't drag it on, drag it on, drag it on, and then all of a sudden you find a way. You're up two goals, and then you give up three. No.
I think it can be a little case by case, though. Like with Team USA, I would have wanted it to be something where you showed that you can hang with a team like even just Belgium.
We looked ridiculous last night.
Yeah, we looked ridiculous.
We looked like ridiculous U.S. soccer that we've seen in the past.
From the standpoint of USA, like it would have been nice to see them. Okay, yes, it's a heartbreaking finish, and that would be gut-wrenching, but you could at least like wake up today and be like, okay,
listen,
maybe we have taken some strides here. We had a mental error here or there. We screwed something up. A ball bounced the wrong way. But, okay, we have made maybe a little bit more progress than what we feel today, which is, dude, we're still miles away.
Yeah, like
we're way miles away. And that's the thing. That's the sad thing about it is that, you know, you wanted to, you know, the song is, I believe that we will win, you know, and you never, you know, that's the whole thing.
Which we also need to change.
We need to change that. I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like this country we bought into. Wow, maybe this side. I even talked about it the other day. They go down 10 men, and we hadn't seen the U.S. in the past play with that kind of passion and that kind of, you know, just you know, straightforwardness. Last night was just comical. It was just comical how, you know, and that's the thing that's so sad. And I'll ask you this question. I know your buddy asked you about, but I'll take the quick death. I hate to say this, but if U.S. wins that match last night and then gets beat by Spain like they did last night, well, I'm kind of like, okay, well, we're just not good enough.
Yeah.
We're just not good enough.
I know. I would feel better. You at least made the quarterfinal, which you hadn't done since 2002.
Yeah.
So I feel like, okay, you've made progress here.
Right.
But this team kind of fell back into what we've seen when they have qualified for the World Cup is you get out of the group stage and you lose in your first round match.
Yeah.
Now, they open it up, so you win your round of 32 knockout stage game.
Right.
But again, to your point, it was Bosnia. Right? How good of a club is that?
Yeah.
One that you are
at
better
one time
than.
When they were Yugoslavia, they were really good.
Yeah.
You know, and now that's a war-torn country that, you know, is putting together soccer, and they show pride and all that. But yeah, you got the win there. You got that, and then to come in this match, you're just like going, wow, okay, they got one of their best players back, and this and that and the other. And Belgium basically just said, we really don't care. It happens on the pitch.
Man.
That's what happened. And they completely shut you down. They were the better side. You know, even when their subs, the quality that they brought on late.
Oh, Lukaku,
they don't have. I mean, that's what you're. If you're the fact that you're bringing those guys on late, that's all you need to really know about your team. You just, you know, the depth that we thought and all this that the United States really doesn't have that.
Yeah, it sucks. It felt like, okay, as a country, we had taken a step forward. And then it was two steps back watching that match last night.
Sure.
It was really,
well,
really disheartening.
Well, I think we'd have felt, okay, if in fact it's the 3-2 loss, you know, in a goal in the 93rd minute or something like that.
Like Lukaku or
and then you feel like, oh, okay, man, they hung with Belgium. But to play just ridiculous soccer for 90 minutes, that's the disappointing thing. That you feel
it's
like
just such a flat performance.
Oh, it's just awful.
It's horrible.
Just awful. And the fact that, you know, you looked like last night, you looked like you had a goalie that plays for the New York football club.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean,
what Freese did was, I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, you all of a sudden, I mean, the best save he makes is the first save. And from that point on, it is downhill. But nobody helping him. I mean, you watch the whole match where every time any kind of little buildup, it was like this Belgium wall, and it just the constant circling, the passing, and it just nothing.
Turnover.
When they sent a ball in, couldn't control it to get a shot off.
Yep.
And you had to score on a free kick,
was a gorgeous kick.
It was a beautiful kick.
Tillman was the best player for America on the
pitch. The fact that it deflected off the wall and went in is even better. But that's what it took. It took a deflection off a defender's head for you to even have a chance last night.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was a shame. They never really when they didn't score first. They'd been all these matches they had scored first,
You know, and you had that Seattle crowd that was just ready. I give them credit. They kept with it until the final goal, and then that's when the realization set in that you're like, well, we're about to go home, boys and girls.
Yeah, I mean, the 817, the fact that you're dragging the U.S. for ending up 16th in the world is bleeping ludicrous. How? This happens every 4 years when they qualify. This is what they do. They end up losing in this stage. How do you overcome that?
Yeah.
And you hear every year excuse after, well, it's pay to play and all this stuff. We grow up and we're driving around and you've got soccer fields all over the place. The first sport you play as a kid. Right?
Yeah.
And you're right on the pay to play thing. Yeah. It's probably free in other countries, and I get that aspect.
These academies are really good. And listen, hey, there's American players that, you know, and came from the academy here. And that's a positive thing. Some of your better players, but it's one of those things where we're always on the back foot in soccer. We're trying to get up on the front foot, but we're always on the back foot, you know, because these families overseas are willing to send their kids away when they're 12 years old mm-hmm. to some academy, and then the next thing you know, they're playing in Spain or someplace like that and getting experience. And you know, we're doing better with playing the, you know, with our guys getting to play, international clubs and stuff like that.
Crystal Palace.
But until we get all our guys playing on those clubs, we're going to be the 16th best team in the world.
Yeah, it was a beating. And, I mean, I would just, the expectation should absolutely not be to just finish 16th in the country, world. I don't understand how that is, in your opinion, 817. And if you want to text in and explain your thought, I'd love to hear you on that. But we're trying to move this thing forward. You don't want to keep coming. You know, we're the United States of America.
The women have moved it forward.
Oh, 100%.
The women have figured out how to move this forward. And maybe whatever the women are doing, however girls are developing, or whatever, maybe we need to look. And I'm just trying to figure things out here. I feel like the Bob Seger song. I'm working on mysteries without any clues. I've got clues, mm-hmm. you know. We
this
just
is one hell of a mystery.
We just aren't good enough at that level, at the men's national level. We're just not.
Well, I think Poch, you know, started to get this thing in the right direction. And we were playing quotes of his and reading quotes of his about needing to change the mentality a little bit. And I think he's absolutely right. I mean, it looked like a soft club. I think your best quote-unquote player is a softie mentally as well, and Pulisic. And he's getting dragged today by all sorts of world media, national media, and I think rightly so. I mean, if you're going to come in with the expectation that you're the best American player, play like it. And unfortunately, he had a terrible tournament. He was banged up.
He played
up.
Good for 45 minutes.
Yeah, Paraguay.
He played very good in the first match for 45 minutes. From that point on, it was really downhill.
Kind of like Anthony Davis that first half against Houston.
Yeah. We'll always get to have that.
Yeah, but Pulisic,
unfortunately,
it was bad.
We have to have everything else.
And I think Nick Wright had a pretty damn good point on him. He said he skipped the Gold Cup, much to the dismay of many current and former teammates and his coach, to be best ready for the World Cup. He then went 6 months without scoring before the World Cup, and in the five games of the World Cup, he missed one and left two early with injury. Another viral tweet read, imagine if Pulisic was half as good as he and the American media thought he was. Yeah. Well, I think we've realized that he's not. He's not that guy. And I'd love to hear when Dawson gets back from vacation, which will be next Monday. I can't wait to hear Gavin's thoughts on this. Maybe he'll tell us all to go bleep ourselves, and he wants to defend Pulisic. Knowing him, I don't think that'll be the case.
Sure.
I think he's probably pretty upset right now as the World Cup dream crushed last night in just a disgusting 4-1 loss to Belgium when you were at home, too. I think that's another element of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all three of the host nations get knocked out. Mexico, you saw, like, they put their heart and guts on the pitch against England, yeah. right? England just was better than what Mexico mm-hmm. was.
Mm-hmm.
But, gosh, Mexico played tough. Not by much. I mean, yeah. Mexico had a hell of a chance. You laid an egg at home in Seattle where you had been 7-0, and it looked absolutely disgusting. Just a terrible way to go out. But we also got just bad news the article out today about Marshawn Nyland.
Yeah.
And he had stage one CTE, they found out, after he took his own life earlier in the season. Stage one, the lowest on a scale of 1 to 4. But from the Concussion CTE Foundation, Boston University CTE Center, researchers diagnosed Nyland with stage one CTE. Unfortunately, I was not surprised, quote from Dr. Ann McKee, to find CTE in the brain of Mr. Nyland, because we have found this progressive brain disease in nearly half of the athletes we've studied who have died before the age of 30. Thanks to the generosity of our brain donor families, we now better understand the earliest stages of CTE, and it is bringing us closer than ever to diagnosing it during life. My team and I are fully dedicated to finding effective treatments and a cure for CTE. And hopefully we do have that one day. That's all we got to hope for.
Yeah, I mean, we got to figure it out at some level. The sport of football absolutely has to figure it out. The idea that you have a 24-year-old
crazy
who already has some of that.
In his second year, right? Was that year two for Nyland?
Yeah, well, that just goes to, it's not even like an NFL thing. It's a football thing.
It's a football thing. It's
in general. That's maybe, him playing.
Maybe 9 years old starting out playing football.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that might be the start of it. You know, we're not playing tackle football until you're, what, in eighth grade, seventh grade?
I can completely understand this coming from my era. We played with, you know, the helmets, the Riddell helmets were just starting to be better, but we didn't really know what concussions were. You know, you would get hit and you would see, like, you know, a pink haze would be over your eyes and you're trying to kind of figure it out, and then you tough it out and go back in. The equipment has gotten so much better, but the problem is the players have gotten so much bigger.
And
you know, when
faster.
I was at LSU, if you were a 300-pound man, you were big. You were a big guy. Man, we're playing with linemen at LSU, 268, 265, you know. But now you've got linebackers that are 255, the way they run, the way they hit. The collisions, yeah, the equipment has gotten better, but the players have gotten so much bigger. Mm. And our bodies aren't built to take a 255-pound guy and run it into another man and expect it. Oh, everything's going to be okay. You know, they've tried to do things with the guardian caps. They've tried to do things where we don't have two-a-day practices every day. You know, they're trying,
yeah.
But there still needs to be more further resource. Or research on how we can, you know, help these. But for a young guy like that to already have stage one, and also in an era, though, where, you know, his equipment was on its way to getting better.
Yeah.
Getting better equipment.
But I think that's a great point.
The issues.
That it's not necessarily an NFL issue. This starts probably with how young these kids are.
Is your high school program, is your high school program following guidelines for helmet fitting? Is the equipment that's being used passed down? What's the, you know, where are we on all this? You know, is it being checked out? Do schools have enough money to make sure that their players are fully taken care of in this regard? Are we cutting corners to make sure that, you know, our football team's out there because we don't have the funds?
Well, and we got a text that tackle football starting as young as 6 in the U.S. That might just be a start.
I played at 9. That's my first time to play tackle football.
Maybe we don't do it until 13, 14. Yeah. I mean, maybe that'll help in some way.
I think I was in third grade. So
I'm going to tell you this.
Third grade.
I'm going to tell you this, though. There's going to be a day, and this is where parents will have control how football is going forward. We love to watch it. We're passionate about it. But there's going to be a day where, you know, and you two have kids that are, you have daughters. You know, I had a son that, you know, and.
Well, I'm raising them to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm raising football girls, man.
Football girls. Well, there you go. So, but what I'm saying is, though, Bennett's mom didn't want him to play. Mm. And I was kind of like, well, you know, look what it did. It helped me. I got a career, da, da, da. I didn't want to be a hypocrite. I didn't want to, like, all of a sudden be saying, wow, my son doesn't play football, and I'm beating my chest, and I'm a decision. I'm a better parent. As I'm sitting there talking about parents who let their kids play football, you know, here I'm making a living, like talking about, wow, what a game, you know, man. If it wasn't for Dak Prescott, it wasn't, you know, that's kind of hypocritical of me to talk about football and make a living out of football, and then all of a sudden I'm like, nah, my kid's not playing.
I hear you.
You know, and that's why I talked to my ex-wife about it. I said, listen, let him play. Let him experience it. You know, let him go and see how it all works out. But a lot of it, like I said, has to do nowadays with the equipment and things like that.
All right, let's get to our top 10 most miserable fan bases in sports. There's a list courtesy of Bustin' with the Boys. Do you agree with it? Plus our G-Bag of the Day champ.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch the Nation.
All right, let's get you set with the G-Bag of the Day champion and the Wooly Bully Top 10 list of the day. It is the G-Bag Nation live in the Comerica backyard of Globe Life Field, getting you set for Rangers and Angels game number one of the series. Broadus has a little CTE update for us that we will get to. Segment of the Nation brought to you by the Frankels. Life is unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one has been hurt in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214-333-3333. And before we get to the update here, Broadus, let's go back into the Pimp Cup and get that G-Bag of the Day champ.
All right, I'm real curious to hear that CTE update. That's crazy.
Yeah,
well, I was. I when I said it, I was like, damn, okay. But also, I was trying to do you a solid where we don't do the CTE update and then throw it into the Pimp Cup.
I was trying to reverse the order. I'm glad you did it that way.
Just a little audible Omaha at the line of scrimmage, Lucius. Hot route.
All right, so our winner and champ going for two today at 5:30 is a dude named Kodak White on Instagram. He only has like 1,200 followers, so he's not like some big Instagram content creator. But he was fishing out there with his older buddy named Mr. J. And Kodak White caught him a 10-pound bass, and he was in ecstasy.
Nah, I got a fish. But I don't know what kind of fish it is, though. I don't think it's a bass. No, he's still here. Oh, Mr. J. Grab the net, Mr. J. Mr. J. Oh, Mr. J. Oh, Mr. J. There he goes. Let's go to the 10 minute, Mr. J. There he f***ing goes. There he goes, Mr. J.
Get him out.
There he goes. Oh, Mr. J. Oh, f***. Look at that mouth. Look at that f***ing mouth.
Boy, look what my boy got. Look what my boy got.
What my boy got.
Oh, my. Where you scared?
Oh, it's right here in the bag.
Oh, my God. Look at the
f***ing
eyes on that
s***. Oh, my God, Mr. J. I don't see the scale, Mr. J.
Oh.
It's right here, Mr. J.
Oh.
It's right here. Oh, my God, Mr. J. Oh, my God. Where's your phone at, Mr. J? Take a picture of that.
No. This boy got a 10.
Oh, take a picture from me, Mr. J. Yeah, I'll turn it around. Oh, my God.
Okay. Going for two at 5:30 today, bro. Oh, my God.
That is some all-time not safe for work fishing audio. Unbelievable at the height of pleasure. The biggest bass this guy's ever seen. Before we get to the top 10
list. Was it the biggest bass?
Yeah.
I don't really know.
We're not sure.
I don't think it was.
We're not sure.
Now, what do we have here, Broadus?
Yeah, I have one of my, there's a good friend of mine who listens to the program in the medical field, actually works in the NFL.
Okay.
And so, listen to our show. Appreciate him always doing that.
Yeah, thank you.
He was saying to me this. He said, listen, we can't determine if people are predisposed genetically to the illness that, that's what nobody wants to discuss. Mm. The only way to know that would be to cut a live person's head open, and we're not going to do that. And he said, that's why you don't know about the illness until they've already passed on. Then you do a brain study. I don't know how they're going to find out from live subjects if they have genetically predisposed, and maybe it's going to be there no matter what, whether you play football or not. So it might be a genetic thing. He says, we also don't know how long it's going to take the stage one CTE to progress to stage two, and then stage three could be 5 years, 10 years, or it could be 40 years.
That's a great point.
So that's, you know, there might be people that that already have it, you know, but we're not testing it or not.
We don't know.
We don't know until after the person has been deceased that maybe this was something that, you know, listen, there's all these studies and things like that we're doing, and I appreciate them all, but it does make sense. He goes, there might be people that already have this even before they play
football, born with it,
or they're born with it. Yeah.
No, so that's true.
That's what they're talking about. This, again, a friend of mine who's in the medical field in the NFL.
No, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
And educating us, because, I mean, all the information we can get, the better. All right, let's slide into the Woolly Bully Top 10, shall we? And I've got the top 10 most miserable fan bases in all of sports. Now,
U.S.
with
soccer.
Boys. And, yeah, I kind of felt like this might be a good day to do it, because I think a lot of U.S. soccer fans are sad and upset today. And I understand it. I'm with you.
You guys did your part, by the way. That crowd. The whole world. The World Cup crowd,
I feel
whether
like everyone
it was
rallied.
In Seattle,
yeah,
Sanford or Santa Clara, Los Angeles, you guys showed up,
and the vibes were awesome at Coliseum last night. Thank you for everybody that came out. But man, I mean, as quickly as Belgium scored, and then it was just unfortunate because Tillman drills that free kick, which was beautiful. And then it's like you blink, holy crap, Belgium scored, and they're right back up. And from that point on, I mean, as soon as you had Freese play that the way he did, and then Reem's not able to get the recovery and block the shot from getting in the net, and it was 3-1, as soon as that happened, it was game over.
That's the saddest play in USA soccer history, right? I mean,
yeah,
seriously.
100%. Terrible.
The freeze frames of Freese kicking the ground. Yeah. He Youngway Koo'd it.
Yeah, he did. He did Youngway.
Remember when Koo went for the kick and then he just kicked the ground?
Exactly. He's never been the same. Maybe you probably need to find a new goal.
100%. You don't bounce back from that, dude. No. You're going to short circuit after that for the rest of time.
So
really, really unfortunate.
When I say most miserable fan base, is there the one that comes to mind for me is Cleveland. It's the Brown fans.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they are.
I mean, you got to go back to what, the 60s for them when they were winning like NFL championships or Jim Brown.
With Otto Graham and stuff like that. Yeah.
But since then, it's just
been. Under Marty Schottenheimer, the Browns were a playoff team, but they had some horrific
losses.
It was
like Minnesota Viking like playoff losses.
Yeah, they had some losses that were, you know, Ernest Biner, the fumbles, the drive. They had some times where they were really a really good football team, you know, and then unfortunately they just had the football gods were not with them in some of those games.
They are most synonymous with NFL sewage, though.
Yeah.
I would think if you went over until LeBron brought that championship home, I would say so. I would say that they probably, you know, they were probably the what were the Indians at one time?
Oh, you're talking about the entire city,
like all of Cleveland.
I'm talking about the whole fan base. Yeah. Is this what this is all about?
Well, this is just specific teams. It's not like just Cleveland fans or like it's specifically like
Cleveland Browns fans,
like number 10 Tennessee Volunteers.
Okay. So is there a basketball team on there too? Is there like other teams?
NFL, NHL, MLB.
I was thinking of miserable cities.
We do not have an NBA team on here. We do actually. Yes, number 7. Number 7 is the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, the Kings got to be on there.
Yeah, there
Kings
go.
Got to be on there. They lit the beam. They did have the beam
that
lighting
one year
season.
Was fun.
They'll always have that.
They will.
But that's the height of positivity.
And now their roster. I mean, we were talking about this off air. Their roster is terrible. Yet they're like looking at that second apron, and they're having to just move on from De'Aaron Fox and possibly Zach LaVine and all their good players.
Yeah, well, DeMar DeRozan is the one that
I said De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, but he was a previous casualty.
Thank you.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they'll end up having to do it with LaVine or not. But they definitely did it with DeRozan. It's a shame to be a tax paying team when you have a disgusting roster and you're not even a playoff team. But, yeah, the Kings deserve to be on this list 100%.
I don't think I can stop with the 100% from the 972. It's, like, in my vocabulary. It's just like a muscle memory. It's like when somebody says thank you and I say my pleasure. It's like a Chick-fil-A thing. I don't know what, when and where I started with, like, 100%. But it's now stuck. And I'll try my hardest.
Are they saying you're using it as a crutch?
972. Yeah, and I do.
We all have crutches.
I do. 100%. I know that.
If you're on this business long enough, you will develop crutches.
Yeah, that's one.
People, I'm sure they're going to text in all my bad crutches.
10 is the Tennessee Volunteers, which, I mean, when was their last natty? In the 98? The year after Manning?
Well, it was after Manning, yeah. It was
T. Martin?
T. Martin, yeah.
So that's been a while now. 9 is the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I think
I think that could be higher. I think when you stop and think about it, it's like...
Yeah, people forget just how bad the Dolphins
have been. Have they won a playoff game?
For them to win a playoff game since the Cowboys won a Super Bowl.
Has this been Dan Marino last time they won a playoff game kind of thing?
I want to say Jay Fiedler won.
Oh, you're right about Jay Fiedler. You're right.
Yeah. Like a wild card
round? 2001 or something. It's the last time they won a playoff game.
Gosh, I was thinking of Chad Pennington, too, wouldn't he?
Yeah, they had some like random good years, they lose in the first round.
100%. You get to the postseason, 100%. then you get smacked.
The White Sox of Chicago coming in at number 8.
That's a good one.
Did they not win a World Series in the mid-2000s? I know they played in one.
I thought that A.J. Pruszynski presented a ball to the Pope here recently. You know,
but yes, the White Sox certainly have been a miserable.
Yeah, 2005. Okay, and they sweep the Stros.
So we're looking at 21 years. The Kings at 7, the Dallas Cowboys at number 6.
I think the Cowboys should be higher.
I think it's about time that people started realizing we're a miserable fan base, because a lot of people just assume like, oh my gosh, you know, you grew up, you know, the ones that are, you know, more so, I'd say what, 40 plus. You know, you got to kind of grow up in the golden age with those 90s dynasties. And so they think, oh, Cowboys fans are spoiled. It's been 30 years since then. Yeah. Now you got a generation of fans that haven't even seen them play on Championship Sunday. It's been a pretty miserable run.
Been a bad run that way, yeah. For championships it has.
Yeah, for championships. 5 is the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
That organization at one time was unbeatable. The players that they had... They were able to go anywhere in the country and get a player. They could go get Tommy Frazier out of Sarasota, Florida, to come play quarterback. You know, they had that ability that they could reach all over the country. And now, I don't know about Matt Rhule. I just don't. I know you're kind of a closet Nebraska fan.
I am. I pulled for the Huskers because I went to that one game. They won me over.
Yeah.
I love them.
But that's... To me, that program shouldn't be in the ditch like it is right now.
I agree with you. I thought,
and I bet you, we got a lot of Nebraska fans that listen.
We do,
because their fan base, like I say, in Dallas, they've got a pretty strong group. But man, they had it rolling, man. Like Miami had it rolling in the 90s.
They fired their last year in the Big 12. They make the Big 12 championship game, and there was the 2 seconds left on the clock. They almost upset Texas with Ndamukong Suh. Rex Burkhead threw a touchdown pass in that game his freshman year. The moment they moved to the Big 10, things just kind of fell apart for them.
Nebraska just doesn't seem like a Big 10 team to me. Maybe I'm being weird because Iowa's a Big 10 team.
I kind of think
of a Big 12 team would be Nebraska.
They need to come back. Colorado, the Rockies at 4. The Toronto Maple Leafs at 3.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Browns at 2. But the number one most miserable fan base, courtesy of our friends at Bustin' with the Boys, the New York Jets.
The Jets
has become a pretty big factory of
Jets. What, the last championship, 1969, Joe Namath?
Yeah.
That far back?
They had the
Super
couple
Bowl III.
They had the Rex Ryan years.
But when you think about
the Mark Sanchez years, all you think about is the butt fumble. You don't even think about AFC championship games.
But they went to back-to-back AFC championships, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, their defense was so good with Revis. I mean, Braylon Edwards was playing good football. Then Sean Green at running back.
Bart Scott, Calvin Pace, and all those guys.
Their defense was freaking nasty. They really, really were. Texas A&M, being Texan quite a bit, the Aggies fans.
That's actually a really good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good thought.
All right, there's your Wooly Bully Top 10 list of the day here in the G-Bag Nation live at Globe Life Field, getting you set for Rangers and Angels. And it's time for the Rangers Player Show. We welcome in Rangers pitcher Peyton Gray next.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, Make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Meola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. Men's National Team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on The Fan.
Thank you very much, Lucius. Let's catch up with Rangers reliever Peyton Gray for our Texas Rangers Player Show, brought to you by Golden Chick and Globe Life. For over 125 years, Globe Life has helped protect families when they need it most. Globe Life, make tomorrow better. And joining us now, after making... he made his Major League debut back in April. Peyton Gray, what a wild road it was to get into the big leagues. Coming up on the other side, we will get into more of a football conversation. We'll continue that talk. Of course, we'll talk with Jared Sandler coming up at 5 as we're live here at the Comerica Backyard, getting you set for Rangers and Angels, with Jacob deGrom getting the ball tonight. Joining us now is indeed Peyton Gray, Rangers reliever. Peyton, how are you? Thank you for giving us some time. What's your game day routine like? Are we interrupting anything right now?
No, you guys aren't interrupting anything. Thank you guys for having me. Just got to the stadium a couple hours ago, having some lunch, getting the body ready to go tonight.
Well, heck yeah, man. I mean, look, your story, it's been well documented. I know you talked about it a bunch back in April during your debut, but if we could just go back to that, you getting the call, what all of that meant to you, and how this season's really unfolded with you here as a Texas Ranger.
Yeah, I mean, just getting that call is an incredible feeling, and then just being able to be up here as long as I have and help the Rangers win games, it's truly been special.
You said you're having lunch right now. What's the ideal pregame meal?
Today I just had some chicken and rice and some shrimp.
Ooh, okay. Well, is it boiled shrimp? Are we doing fried shrimp? What kind of shrimp?
Popcorn?
No, I think it was fried shrimp, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how they prepare it.
We're just eating it. You know, that it doesn't really matter how it's prepared. Food is food, and it's fuel. So when you look back at your journey to get here, if you have other – and we got the Major League Baseball draft. We're just talking with CY. That's coming up this weekend. For other young Major League hopefuls, I should say, that are listening right now, what advice would you give when you reflect back on how you were able to get to this point?
Most importantly, I think not every path to the major leagues is going to be the same. So I don't think you should look at others and model yourself after, well, they made it then, I should make it then, stuff like that. Because everyone has a different path, and everyone's going to have different speed bumps and stuff like that along that path. So I think just trust yourself and be confident and just do your thing.
Peyton, what was it? Was there something that you, when you were, you know, when you're getting ready for this opportunity, was there something about the major leagues you thought, man, this is, yeah, the major leagues, and then you got here and you went, man, I was totally wrong about that?
No, I mean, no, not at all. It's everything that you dream of and that we all dreamed of as little kids. It's all of that and much more.
What's been the biggest adjustment for you going from the minors and then coming up here to the big boys?
I could say, like, the stadiums and stuff like that. Obviously, you play in a much bigger stadium and bigger crowds and stuff like that. But I think just how everybody goes about their business at the major league level, it's truly professional. And, like, our ultimate goal is to win games every night. And it's cool to see how guys go about their every day.
How crazy is it pitching on the road compared to a home game? Does it crank up the level of difficulty a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some early on that were big crowds or like a big moment. Toronto had good crowds when we were there, so it was good for me to be able to come in there and like shut it down a little bit. So that's been cool to do. But yeah, there's been a lot of cool stadiums that we played at.
Hey, do you sit out in the bullpen now and kind of, you've been here long enough that you kind of know as you're watching the game when it might be your situation? How do you take in a game, like the first few innings? Do you just kind of sit there and then you start to think, okay, this game's kind of looking like maybe I need to make an appearance in this one? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, for sure. I think the coaches, they all meet before the game, and they obviously have a game plan on how they want to go about it, depending on score and stuff like that. And then sitting on the bullpen, our bullpen coach, he's pretty transparent, and he'll kind of give you the heads up of, like, this is where we're looking in the lineup that you match up the best against, stuff like that. So you can kind of follow the lineup, follow the game, and your spidey senses usually go off when you think it's your turn.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the I've always wanted to ask a pitcher about the PitchCom thing. And, you know, you probably grew up, you know, with a catcher giving you signs and all that. And how do you like the PitchCom? Is it do you even know it's in your hat, or how's that working out for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've used it for a couple of years now. You don't notice it at all. I really do like it. I think it helps the flow of the game and stuff like that. And it eliminates some of the sign-stealing opportunities and stuff for pitchers. So, I mean, I think it helps me. So, I like it.
Is that a number one concern? I know getting outs and locating pitches and stuff, but you just said, though, stealing signs. If you asked a pitcher, which I'm doing right now, is that your number one concern of you? I know you want to throw strikes and stuff, but is that a number one concern for a pitcher, is getting signs stolen?
I wouldn't say it's number one. I think everyone is aware teams are going to try to do everything they can to have an advantage against you. So I think it's something that we're all aware of in our deliveries and our mechanics, our windup, that we all try to do the exact same thing every pitch, no matter what pitch you're throwing.
Peyton Gray with us here in the G-Bag Nation, Rangers reliever. So your pitch mix, how's that evolved? Well, have you found a pitch that maybe when you started your career, you liked throwing more, and then you were able to tweak another pitch, and now you're relying more on, say, the changeup versus the fastball, the slider? How's that grown for you?
Yeah, I obviously am a big changeup guy. I came up my first probably month, I was throwing a lot of them. I would say over this last month, I've incorporated my cutter and my fastball a little more. The usage has gone up a little bit. Scouting reports and stuff on you get out there, so you kind of have to flip the script every once in a while. But yeah, I would say I'm still a changeup heavy dominant pitcher.
Okay, so what's the information that you're getting on these hitters? I mean, you don't have to give away too much, right? We do have a game tonight. But is it like an overload of information? Have you been able to kind of, you know, iron down, okay, this is kind of what I need to focus on, so you don't overwhelm yourself?
I think every pitcher is different, and everyone wants to be prepared in a different way. Things I look at would just be like swing percentages and stuff like that in certain counts, and like, where you can throw the fastball against them and stuff like that. But they give us unlimited amount of data, and they can prepare us as much as you want to be prepared. But yeah, sometimes it can be overwhelming. I think just going out there and ultimately throwing your best stuff and attacking the strike zone is going to help.
Peyton, do you like pitching outdoors or indoor stadiums? I know you're going to probably say, it's okay both. I can kind of do both. But do you have a preference, indoor, outdoor, when you get to play or pitch?
I wouldn't say I have a preference. I do like pitching here in Globe Life. It's a very controlled feeling. The weather, you know what you're going to get every time.
Sure.
We just got back from Cleveland, and it was so hot, and it's like, In a really hot, humid game like that, sometimes it's hard to keep your hands dry, so then the ball might be slipping, stuff like that. So you could say I might prefer indoor.
I noticed, too, you wear long sleeves when you pitch. Is that all the time when you go out there? Is that something you've always done? I don't remember ever seeing you pitch in short sleeves.
Yeah, you haven't, and you won't.
Okay.
I only pitch in long sleeves. I only practice in long sleeves. I don't know. It's
okay.
Just been one of those things, like a sun protection thing. I know some guys pitch in long sleeves to help, like, eliminate forearm movements if you're shifting grips. I know some guys do that. But, yeah, I've always just kind of done it because we're out in the sun so often. So it's just nice to protect yourself.
I got you. So, but for you, when it's like you're talking about pitching out in Cleveland in a hot, humid day, do you just have to remind yourself, like, okay, I'm doing this for a reason. I'm doing this for a reason. You know, or is it just so natural to you now that you're just going to be hot and with the long sleeves on?
Yeah, it's so natural. I don't even notice when I'm there. I mean,
yeah.
It feels odd to not have long sleeves on. I put my jersey on the other day without long sleeves, and I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Bad look.
So we saw the video of Skip telling the club that Jacob Latz had made the All-Star team. What was the reaction for you in the bullpen for him?
I mean, nobody more deserving. I mean, he's done so much for us this year, and he's a great dude, and he works hard. He's earned this, and we were so pumped for him. I mean, I think we were kind of talking about it before it got announced, just because we all kind of had a hunch. We were like, no way, he's not an all-star, stuff like that. So we were all super excited for him, and he deserves it.
All right, who's the biggest ball buster in the pen, and why is it Tyler Alexander?
Surprisingly, it's not Tyler.
It's not Tyler.
Fairly quiet. I would say Cal, but he hasn't been in the bullpen this past week. But yeah, maybe Cole Wynn.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
All right.
You mentioned Cal. Is he big time in you guys now that he gets to start? Does he like feel like that? You know, like he gets to like cut in line at the, you know, to get the extra chicken and rice or whatever. What's going on there? Is he
stealing all the shrimp?
Is he stealing all the shrimp off your plate? What's going on there?
No, I think he misses us. He knows we're a fun bunch out there.
Well, you're the man, dude. It's been awesome watching your journey so far. Keep crushing it. Give him hell out there. We'll be pulling for you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. Peyton Gray of your Texas Rangers. What an amazing story. And, of course, your player show brought to you by Golden Chick and Globe Life for over 125 years. Globe Life has helped protect families when they need it most. Globe Life, make tomorrow better. All right, let's get into a little football fix, shall we? Sean Payton's wild idea. Hmm. The league's top 10 corner list. Do the Cowboys have any top players in the top 25 under 25 list? That's next in the nation.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's absolutely refreshing!
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.